EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are joining us from. How are you all doing? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Up first tonight is Michael in Alberta, Canada. And Michael is going to be taking us back to 1978, when he witnessed 2 very different UFOs. Then next up is Jason in California in the US. And Jason will be sharing his UFO sightings, a possible cryptid encounter, and some of his paranormal experiences both stateside and from his time in the United Kingdom. Michael is up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Michael, and welcome to the show.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in a little town. I call it El Dorado, but it's not its real name. It's about an hour and a half east of Edmonton, so I'm quite far in the sticks.
Lovely. Nice. Okay, Michael, you have some encounters to share with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, sir?
Sure. Give this a go here. So in the early summer of 1978, I'm going to say it could have been 77, but I'm pretty sure it was 78. I was around 12. And I came home from school and I found my newspapers on the front step. So that was my job. I was a paper boy, and after school every day, I'd deliver my papers. Almost everyone in the block got one. So it was it took me about an hour and a half to do it. And my route was basically a loop that started at my front step where the papers were dropped off. And then I'd walk around this 4-corner block. This was a new suburb south of Edmonton in the town of Leduc. We were only a few miles away from the international airport. So any southbound jets would fly over. Seems like they'd fly right over our house and stop talking for a few minutes while they went over. So the story could be said to start with the end, because something happened that I can't explain. No one else saw it. I've been wanting to understand it my whole life. So, yeah, I'm just going to go for it here. Maybe it'll circle one day and I'll just return to my sighting with a sense of understanding. I think that's what a lot of experiencers want, is just to understand what they saw. And this journey is powered by curiosity, right? And it could come stronger as we age, as we put down more baggage, I think. So it could be just a neutral curiosity, like a mystery novel. You know, how does the story end, right? It could be as simple as that. But something more deep, more existential, like, you know, what is our role in the universe? What is my role? Anyways, that gives you an idea of where my brain goes with all this stuff over the years. So the event that triggered the start of my life as a conscious, suffering, curious, and a learning person, human, or the event started that. Before that, I was, you know, I was a kid, right? I was carefree at school, playing with friends, watching TV, you know, come race home every day to watch Star Trek on TV, reading novels, Saturday movie at matinees, you know, just the normal stuff for us, hey? And I had my paper for spending money, and I even went to church. I was just kind of a normal kid, I guess. But after my sighting, there were changes. I became self-conscious about my stuttering. I lost my belief in the teaching of my church, and I just stopped attending. I just never felt comfortable there. And I developed an anxiety disorder. So I would wake up anxious in the morning, and I couldn't eat, or if I did, I would, you know, throw up in the alley on the way to school. And my parents did their best to help me, of course. Our family doctor was a well-known hypnotherapist, which was kind of cool because he figured out that it was mental, was anxiety, and he taught me how to do progressive relaxation when I was 12. So now I can just, you know, chill at will. And then about 20 years ago, I started meditation, which is kind of goes along the same route, I suppose. So I made it through the rest of junior high and high school, despite my stuttering and my anxieties. But I wonder who isn't anxious grades. You know, and it was stuff like I couldn't use the washroom, I couldn't eat in restaurants, I don't like flea markets for some reason. But I made it to university, and with time I overcame my anxieties. I worked through things really well, I think, the age. And I think I can say this, I overcame my stuttering, as you can tell. And I found a career as a speech pathologist. So, things happen for a reason. But there's this deep question in my unconscious mind that drives me more and more and expresses itself as depression sometimes, insomnia. I have an urge to be a prepper, even though I don't carry it out. You know, I don't have like an emergency kit in the basement or anything. For a long time, I had a drive to learn self-defense. So I spent many years learning karate, you know, that kind of stuff. But that's all sort of fallen away, right? Time, I guess, and age. You could say, though, that I'm basically a dictionary of the psychological problems of modern man. And in its most benign form, it drives me to express it. It expresses itself as curiosity. And maybe I've dropped most of my complexes. I've seen an analyst, a Jungian analyst, and that really helped me sort of look inwards, I guess. Okay, so not about me. It is about me, but it's really about the event that triggered this. So this is what I saw. To do my paper route, I would load the papers in a wagon, and I would carry and make my way around the block. If they were small, I could carry them in a bag on my shoulder kind of thing, but there's usually quite a pile. And this day, something in the sky, a movement perhaps, it drew my attention to the west. And there I saw a triangular craft just stationary in the sky, unmoving, stationary. It was far away, but I would guess it would be, you know, big, right? And you know how we always guess how big things are? It's hard, right? Unless you're a pilot, whatever. But I'm going to guess it was at least as big as a passenger jet, you know, judging by the jets that would leave the airport, maybe a bit smaller. And it's the classic perfect equilateral triangle. It was gray, black, one of those two, you know, somewhere in the range. And it had three large lights on one side that kind of looked like engines, you know. And the rest was, I drew a picture and it kind of looked like, I drew a picture when I was a kid, and it kind of looked like a pie because there was also two fins on the back. And I think there was a dome in it too. So maybe it wasn't as big as I thought. Just recently, like yesterday, I've been reading the novel Secret Machines. And the machine that he describes really matches what I saw, which is, you know, kind of cool. But that machine was man-made. I haven't got that far in the novel. So anyways, I see this ship. It's stationary and to the west. And then I scan the sky and I see a second one we'll call it the sister craft or UFO-2. And it's exactly the same shape, description, everything. But it's in the north, and honestly, it would have been right over the airport. If it, you know, I'll just leave it at that. So the first one remained at about 9 o'clock, and the new one was at about 1 or 2. And the second UFO would have been really close to the airport, but, you know, radar and stuff. And I was a kid. I didn't think about calling. So nothing happened for a minute or two. And then UFO-1 traveled directly across the sky to be right beside UFO-2. And it was such a distance to travel in no time at all. Kind of like, oh, I've read someplace where you don't actually see it move. You just see point A and point B, and our brain imagines the moving in between. But, you know, that's how fast it is. So, you know, it would have taken a jet 30, 60 seconds to fly that far, right? But this thing was instant, just like that. And then both of them, they hover there for, hover doesn't seem like the right word, but they're there for a few minutes. And then up and north, just straight up. You know, they didn't like tilt and zoom off like a plane would or a helicopter. They just sort of staying completely stationary, moved up and away. I'm using my hands to describe the motion, which does not help. So a couple eye blinks and there goes. There was no sound. And, but more than that, there was no sounds in the neighborhood. There was no life in the neighborhood. And maybe that's just because my attention was so focused on the UFOs that, you know, I couldn't hear or see anything else. I wasn't seeing, you know, it was just like riveted, right? So, but anyways, there was no cars, there's no people. I don't even, you know, I'm going to say there was no wind. I don't know how you remember wind after 30 years. I don't think there was any wind. Sky was clear, the sun was high, you know, and where we live here in the summertime, this would have been maybe June-ish. We get really long days of sun. You know, the sun doesn't really go down until around 9 or 10 at night. Clear, easy to see, no clouds. Now, I don't really remember my state of mind or exactly what I did afterwards, but I think I just carried on with my paper route. I know eventually I told people, I told my mom and dad, and I've asked them recently, you know, if they remember telling them this, and they have no memory of it at all, right? So, you know, they must have not taken it seriously or, you know, kind of shrugged it off. Or their minds were, their memory was erased. I don't know, you know, it's easy to tell stories with memories like this. The other people I told, my friends, you know, my sister, they've all passed away since then. So kind of just my little story to carry around inside my head and share. So anyways, I carried on with my paper route. You know, it's just a block, like literally a block. There's a little offshoot to do the lodge. And I remember one lady in the lodge, she had this beautiful orange plant. I don't know why, but this memory is clearer, as clear as the UFOs, but it was just this, you know, like an ornamental orange inside her suite next to the window, and it had oranges growing on it. I've always been fascinated by that and, you know, wanting to recreate that. You know, memories seem random sometimes, but I don't know. So I do my block, I do my paper route and, you know, whatever, drop the papers in the doors and carry on, next. And I get to the last side of the square block and I have a second experience. And I was doing the route with my head craned in the sky, right? Like wanting to see more. Every time I came out, I'd look up and see what was there. Well, this time it happened. My head was up, looking up, and I looked up and I saw an enormous cigar-shaped craft. And it wasn't far away like the first two either. It was like, this was the one that, it was right over the split-level house that I just delivered the paper to. Heard Art Bell's talk about his triangles and how he could throw a rock at them, you know, and I wasn't a good thrower, but I made a good try at that anyways. So anyways, this cigar-shaped craft, it's moving. It's moving slowly right to left. Across my vision, and I'm just completely mesmerized, right? One of those things that gets seared in your memory. And of course, there was no sound. And it felt like I was the only person in the world, just me and this craft. No sounds, no traffic, no people. If anyone was in the front window of my house, they could have seen me standing there looking at this thing, or in fact, anyone, right? Like the house I just delivered the paper to, like people look around. I don't know why it was just me, but it was huge. It was just enormous. It was silver. There was no markings, with no seams, no rivets or anything like that. No dents from interstellar collisions or scorch marks, no nothing. It was just this pristine, shiny, silver chrome thing. Perfect, it really was. I don't remember, I think it had a pointed end, but it might have been rounded off. You know, like sometimes cigars, before you clip the end off, they have a little pointy tip, so I don't know. But the important part about this sighting was that there was a front. I'm guessing it was a front. I mean, it could have been backing it. But it was moving across my vision, and there were lights orbiting around, I guess I'm just going to call it the cone, right? It seemed like the cone, but it was about that distance from, if you divide it in half, you come forward right close to the front of the craft. And they were orbiting around, I guess they were like light balls, like planets around the sun, right? And it was pretty quick. It would have been, I don't know how to describe the quickness of the motion. Three times as fast secondhand on a wristwatch. You know, it was just moving fast. And they were colorful too. There was maybe three. They were glowing and they were colorful. I think there was red, white, maybe a yellow one. And then that's where my memory stops. Just completely. Nothing. After that, my memory is gone. I don't remember even finishing my route. I just remember being home, telling my family what I saw, and carrying on. But now, with age, I'm wondering what, I don't remember it going away. I don't remember it taking off and disappearing. What happened? I just remember seeing those spinny little things, you know, like I'm being hypnotized, and it disappeared away. But I didn't see it. I'm just at home. So, and that's where life carries on. You know, I told people their reaction, I think, was flat. You know, no excitement or surprise. And even now when I mention it, you know, they're kind of iffy about, I'm sure you've experienced this already, you've heard about it, where you just don't bring it up at a dinner party. Oh yeah, I saw a UFO and it was, and none of my memory went away. So, you know, it is quite fun to be able to talk about this out loud. So I believe it's what I don't remember that has driven my curiosity and my anxiety in my life. And I just wonder why my memory stopped while I was looking at those lights rotating around the cone of the UFO. You know, I must have finished my route, you know, but where did the ship go? Did it fly away? Why don't I remember that? You know, what happened to me? Did something happen to me? And, you know, then my ego or my bigger self looks at my ego and says, well, you know, why did it just come to you? I mean, who are you, right? The analytical me kind of questions whether maybe it was a hallucination. But I mean, you know, I work in brain injury and dementia, people with dementia, and you know, people have hallucinations for reasons, right? So it's something's going on with the brain. You know, I have a normal brain. I still have a normal brain. Knock on wood. You know, no drugs, mental health was okay. It's after the mental health stuff started. So as I mentioned before, this was the time my social anxiety started. My stuttering worsened and, you know, I became estranged from my church. And I'm just wondering, is this a coincidence? You know, is this a developmental milestone that my mind created something to mark the boundaries? Or, you know, was something initiated? Did something change in my brain? And then as I was thinking about those things, I start thinking about other things in my life that were a little strange. But they're more subtle, right? You know, like dreams. And the only dream I'm going to recall or retell is a recurring dream that was more of a childhood dream. And it was a dream of my body floating through an opening cut into a stone wall. It was kind of like a door. And at first, there's plenty of space between the ceiling and the floor. But as I drift inwards, the distance between those two would get closer, kind of like a wedge. And they move closer and closer to the point where it was too narrow for me to pass. And then I just wake up. I've had that dream scores of times. Not as an adult, though. You know, like maybe it was even before my experience. I'm not sure. And, you know, and I love coincidences. I love reading into things and looking for meaning. So maybe there's a connection there. There's a white light at the other side of this passage, right? But I can never quite reach it because each time wasn't happy either. Scared. So that's the dream part of things. I've had another strange recollection as recurring visits of figures in my bedroom at night. And again, these could be explained as just normal dreams, but you know, well, that's why we're talking, right? What if not? So most of the dreams, I see a dark figure standing in the doorway or in the corner or even at the side of my bed. There's no details. I know it's got arms, head, and a leg and stuff, two legs, but it's just black, right? And my wife confirms that what happens is I sit up really suddenly in bed and I yell out, right? I call out in fear. And then I reach for my light to turn it on and they disappeared. But when they're gone, it leaves me just, you know, with the adrenaline, that fear feeling, that emotional sense. And then somehow I go to bed, right? And they've mostly diminished those things. But recently, I've been doing more stargazing. I'm on vacation, so I get to stay up late and do the things I like to do in life. I had a visitor, but it looked like a little lizard. It looked like it had like a long alligator head. So, you know, is that a dream? Is this stuff again? I don't know. But that one, I never like wake up and I'm like, oh, hey, buddy, how's it going? Let's communicate and share our oneness. You know, I'm always like striking out or screaming or yelling. I had an out of body experience once where I was just laying in my apartment. You're out of body. You float up and you see yourself and then you're sort of floating away. But that's as far as it goes. The only thing I remember from that experience was that I had a strong urge to, or a strong message, I think, to call a friend of mine who I hadn't seen in quite a few years. So that was pretty unremarkable, a little blip. And then finally, one last experience of kind of lost time. And I'm in Jasper, and it's a national park here. And I was sitting on one side of the valley, and the other side of the valley is these beautiful mountain ranges and everything in between, right? It's just giant, vast space. And I went away. I didn't have a seizure or anything, but my dad came and saw me like an hour later. It just seemed like minutes. He was mad at me because, you know, oh, you got to come and help me set up the camp or, you know, get taken off and keeping up your chores. And as far as I know, it was just minutes, right? So that brings me to my encounter story and my feelings of connections to you and your listeners and why I'm here on this show, I guess, hopefully. Some say ufology is kind of like a new religion, you know, a world that just stopped believing in God for the most part, spontaneously created the mythology of the UFO and non-human life forms, or extra human, I guess. Far-fetched and more philosophical way to explain of, you know, video evidence of the ship. We don't have direct evidence of abductions. You know, people have weird marks on their skin and stuff, and unexplained pregnancies that disappear. I mean, that seems pretty real, but it's not like you have pictures of UFOs, right? So that one seems a lot more vague to me. Of course, I don't know. Maybe I was abducted. I don't know. Who knows, right? Maybe I saw things that triggered all my anxiety. My kids have anxiety too, and started around the same age, and that also makes me wonder. I mean, anxiety is a bitch, right? And I don't know. Maybe we always look for reasons to explain it, you know, like, why are you anxious? So maybe that's part of what's happening in my brain. But as you can tell, I'm really interested in the psychology of experiencing of the phenomena. You know, like, do we have a spiritual gene that predisposes us to seek and believe? Is there like a survival instinct? Well, there is. We have a survival instinct. I'm sure we do, to belong to a group, you know, and have a group focus and have rules that support the group cohesion, you know, because we're social and those things just help us function better and, you know, conquer the world. The idea that it's going back a little bit, that it's created just by our consciousness, you know, all these things are just created by our consciousness. And I mean, that's hard, right? Because we'd all have to, that means big things. Like, we aren't just isolated beings. I don't know if you ever watched Star Trek, but there was an episode where Spock was taken over by a non-corporeal being, and this person was in his body, right, looking through his eyes. And he says, oh, the world is so small like this, trapped inside these shells of bodies. He didn't like it, right? But what if we are connected? And I know a lot of people go in that direction with spirituality, with religion even, you know? I mean, the church has kind of taken the God out of spirituality. But if you just think of that universal thing that unites us all, I mean, we could call it whatever we want. It's something that's beyond words, really. You know, we call it God. Some people call it God. Some people call it, you know, eternal. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm still a caveman. And I think of like 2001 Space Odyssey and Monolith lands and teaches us how to smack each other with thigh bones. The scary idea for me is the Skynet theory, where, you know, there's sort of like a civilizations achieve a certain level of technology and then they create artificial intelligence, which gets smarter and smarter until it doesn't need us anymore. And then that's what becomes the new life form and goes out and conquers the universe or explores the universe. I have to get out of my colonial headset. That's a hard one to shake to. Anyways, but also, what does the experience do to us people? You know, like, it seems kind of negative compared to like a religious experience, or maybe not. A lot of people have had bad religious experiences, but you know, the negative, the uncertainty, the anxiety, the feeling that, you know, something is wrong. There's before and after, and we're stuck in this middle liminal zone where, you know, we forget we're here even in the middle. And it's just this stuckness, that feeling that something is, could there be good stuff that comes from all these interactions? You know, good psychological things. I mean, there's nothing wrong with curiosity, nothing wrong with, mostly nothing wrong with technological development. There's consequences to that too, right? But the sense of community, that getting out of yourself, maybe that is the point. We kind of loop around to more of a spiritual explanation, spiritual ways of looking at things. So I hope that telling my story will keep the wheel rolling, my life's wheel rolling, and maybe take me to a place, back to the place where it started, you know, at the beginning. The beginning that if I had the answers to my missing memories, you know, may also be the end.
Good job, Michael.
I love how you sit back and just let us tell our story. It's really cool.
Well, you know, Michael, that's what it's all about. And this obviously still bothers you after all this time.
Yeah, but is it bother, or is it that feeling that something's not right, that I'm missing something? That's what it is. It's a feeling that I'm missing something. And, you know, if you know much about Buddhism, I mean, that's the nature of our suffering, right? It's that craving for, we always crave for something. And maybe that's built into us too, right? Because we go back to our primitive selves and we always have to, you know, you can't just sit around and relax and enjoy life in your bungalow. You always got to be, you know, watching for danger or looking for food, the UFOs. And that's what just takes it out of the psychology for me completely. I can't just write it off to a figment of everyone's imagination. Not completely, anyway.
I mean, you had, you know, two major sightings in one in pretty much a very short span of time.
Yep. The second one is especially, the triangles were, you know, they're just remote over there, right? And it's just seeing things fly that don't normally behave like that. I mean, that should be amazing, right? But I don't know, maybe it's the modern world and jaded, you know, too many Star Trek movies. There can never be too many Star Trek movies or Star Wars movies. But, you know, but the, I have yet to see, maybe Close Encounters of the Third Kind comes close, but that, just that sensation of awe and being mesmerized and mentally and I don't know, physically captured by that cigar-shaped one. How does your memory just stop like that? It sure feels like I was hypnotized, you know? Watch the spinning balls, puny human. And then all of a sudden, okay, we have him now. Take him aboard. And I've always had a lot of nosebleeds in my life, but I live in a dry, pretty dry climate. So, I mean, it's easily explained, right? And headaches and, you know, it's like, but I think that's more imagination making story out of, based on reality and all.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a possibility. That's always something which always should be considered. Obviously, if you were getting a continuous amount of nosebleeds, and there wasn't particularly any explanation for it if you had gone to see a professional about it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've done that. Yeah, they just say it's just dry skin. You know, I'm like, hey, thanks for nothing. Have a humidifier, and it is a dry climate, right? Maybe I'm meant to live in a more humid climate. I'll move to Hawaii someday.
After your encounters, how long was it before that your anxieties seemed to have increased?
You know, I'm going to say instantly, but I'm sure it was gradual over weeks. But that's a really good question, because I do remember a time when I remember like just doing stuff, right? You don't worry about it. You want to go hang out with your friends or stay with a friend on the weekend or whatever, you just did it. There was no social fear of anything, right? But then that came, it was right around that time. And maybe it's just thinking about, you know, how I've dealt with managed my anxiety over the years that's sort of brought those memories back into play. I'm working on it with my analyst too, and he doesn't just sort of write me off like a wacko with hallucinations. But I guess that's his job not to do that. But, you know, I think it's related. The whole thing is, it's just nice to take a step back and look at your life, right? And understand the paths you take and think, well, maybe that wasn't a good one. Maybe I can change it, you know? But I'm also trying to help my kids, and so they don't just have to kind of go through it like I did over the years. Fix themselves when they're older. Maybe we can help them now. But what if, you know how they say experiencers, it runs in the family? I mean, what if something happened to them too? That would be kind of scary. But, or, you know, it's just genetic and built in. Who knows?
And how old are they now?
I've got a 17-year-old and a 20. Yeah, so they're, myself at their age, I was right into the anxieties. So that's kind of where they're at too. It's very, very parallel. Like mini me's. One of them copes by withdrawing, and the other one just puts his head down and barrels through. And that's kind of me. Both of those are me. That's why I was never good at karate, because I didn't think. I just rushed in and got punched, and it was over.
You said you talked to your analyst. Would you talk to him about your experiences?
Yes, I have talked to him about it, and I tried to read Jung's book about UFOs, but it's beyond me. I lacked the prerequisites to understand a lot of what he was saying. But I love how he doesn't write it off. You know, it's part of being human. And I also like how Jung uses mythology and stories from all times, right? That connects us through time. I've always been sort of fascinated with the idea of time collapsing, I guess. When I was younger, I went to art school, and when I was younger, I made a film, and that was my theme, was like this apartment building where I lived. It was kind of spooky, but it had atmosphere, and I was just trying to get the feeling of all the lives that lived there before. I had a neighbor who had an experience, and she said it was like this black cloud that would just sort of appear out of the ceiling and descend on her, and it was like a horror story. But I working in hospitals and long-term cares and stuff, I mean, there's a lot of people coming and going in either physical form or dying. There's a certain energy about spaces that, and then when you think about the whole time aspect of things, right? Like the visitors are from other times. Maybe that's how it works. And maybe that's why that cigar-shaped one just disappeared, right? Because it popped into our reality and it disappeared, popped into another one. I find that fascinating too. I think it's fascinating because it's so far beyond our understanding, our ability to do, it's like magic. It's like, it's like God. Before technology, we claim to learn and understand everything. Well, we don't claim that, but we understand a lot. But, where we became too big for our britches, I think, which is not to be pejorative about that. I think it's just, it happens, right? I mean, that's human nature, right? Part of our evolution. I just hope we don't make a Skynet. That would be bad.
Yeah, that would be bad. I'm going to say you're not my first guest that has had an experience involving a cigar on their paper round.
Mm. You know, I would really like to. I live in a small town. It's just below the hospital and the school and stuff, right? So there's not. It'd be pretty hard to find an experience or community here. I've never asked, but it's not the kind of thing you bring up at coffee break, right? So, but it would be really neat to, maybe I'll reach out a bit more. I know there's online communities. Kind of a loner anyways, you know, quite content. But it would be nice to just kind of sit down and have a beer with somebody and say, oh, and then it did this. Me too! You know, wouldn't that be cool?
It would be, yeah. I mean, there is plenty of communities out there. And, I have a lot of listeners in Alberta as well. So, you know, maybe one of them would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure how you do the connecting, but I'll for sure give you my permission to pass on email. We'll ask, whatever. That's cool.
So you're in Alberta. So you're you must be close to Edmonton, are you? Are you close to Edmonton?
Yep, exactly. About an hour and a half east.
Okay, so if there's any other experiences out there in the Alberta, Edmonton area that'd like to reach out to Michael, send us your email and I will pass them on gladly.
Awesome. We'll start a club.
The Edmonton Experiences Club.
The Edmonton Experiences Club.
Well, Michael, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Yeah, Nick, that was great.
Okay, Michael, it's been great speaking to you. Keep in contact, all right, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Take care, Michael. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. Hello, Jason, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi there. Yeah, it's great to be on your show, and hopefully you'll enjoy the little encounters that I have to tell.
I'm sure I will. Thank you for joining us today, Jason. Calling from the state of California.
Yes, and Central California.
Central California. That's great. Jason, you have some encounters to share with us. Would you like to start at the beginning, please?
I guess, yeah, I'll start when, you know, the first series of experiences that happened to me is when I was younger, probably 10, 11 years old. This happened early 90s. And, you know, me and my friends growing up, I guess you can say that we were like the group of kids from Stranger Things, except without all the extreme weird stuff happening. You know, we were all into the paranormal. And, you know, at the time, you know, X-Files wasn't even out yet. So we had to make do with old episodes of In Search Of and going to the library and finding old Reader Digest books about the paranormal and stuff like that. But it was something that we're always into. Now, we even tried to get my mom's Siberian Husky, and we formed a circle around it, and we were trying to make it levitate. So we were just, you know, really, really into it. But the first thing that happened to us was actually a UFO sighting. It was during the summertime. I remember that because we were out of school, and we were hanging out at my neighbor's house. It was four of us, me, my brother, and three other friends, there was four or five of us, just hanging out talking. And it was dusk, so it had to be about 9, maybe 9:30 at night. And in the area that I live in Central California, there is a airport about 20 miles from where we were at. And at the time, they had Army National Guard there. So you always had Chinooks and stuff flying over. So we'd always have stuff flying over the vicinity of our neighborhood. But I remember we were just all there hanging out, talking, and we noticed something flying in the sky going the same direction as these helicopters fly. They'd fly south, due south of us, and, you know, didn't make any notice of it, but we started looking at it, and the thing that was strange about it was it wasn't making any noise. You know, if you've ever heard of Chinook, it's got that boom, 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 because it's a double rotor helicopter, and it's a pretty good-sized helicopter. But this was about the same size as a Chinook, so it was a good, I'd say, 65, 70 feet in length. And as it got closer, like I said, there's no sound, and we're just watching, and it was, you know, as you probably know from encounters, UFO encounters in the early 90s, it was a black triangle. And we're watching it, this black triangle, it had the just black with three white lights at each of its corners. But the weird thing was, you know, I heard other encounters saying there's, you know, red light in the middle. But this one had the red light in the middle, but it was actually moving, doing a figure eight inside of the triangle itself. So that was a bit odd. And like I said, we were watching it just slowly, you know, fly over us, no sound at all. That was the weird thing. It's like no sound at all. It's like just watching it, you just couldn't hear anything. Couldn't hear traffic, couldn't hear, you know, dogs in the neighborhood barking, nothing. It was just completely dead quiet. And this thing just flew over. It seemed like a good 5, maybe 10 minutes until it gradually made its way over the horizon to where we were at and completely disappeared. So that's the first thing that, you know, I talked about. Like, I don't know, you know, conspiracy theories about black triangles, that are they man-made? Are they UFOs? I know, you know, if you look at a lot of, you know, secret military aircraft, a lot of them tend to have a triangle type shape to them. So, you know, can't say for definite that, you know, it's extraterrestrial, but, you know, definitely a UFO. The second encounter, I'll just go straight to it. It was probably a year or so after this incident happened. Remember, it was at night. I think it was around the springtime, and I believe it was a Friday or Saturday, because we were able to stay out late. I was still in school, and there was a meteor shower that was supposed to happen, a big meteor shower. So we were allowed to stay out in my front yard, and me, my brother, and few friends in the neighborhood, we were there, and we were laying on the front yard looking up, just watching the light show. And it was a pretty decent sized meteor shower. There was meteors going off all over the place, and we were probably watching them for a good 30-45 minutes. And for some reason, I don't know what made me do it, but, you know, I sat up and I just looked over the street to the neighbors across from me, their houses, and there was this black figure on the roof of one of the houses in front of me. And I first thought maybe my eyes were playing a trick on me, because I've been gazing up at this meteor shower for so long, and I'm just looking at it, and all of a sudden it started to move. And this thing, it almost seemed, it was bipedal, but it was hunched over, like it can equally be at home on all fours. And it seemed like it was panther-like, as it had this dark black body. I couldn't see any features. It was just black. It was just blacker than the night sky that surrounded it. But I remember it seemed to me like it was a good 6 to 7 feet tall, and it had a tail that was about equal to its body length. So it was a good size. And I'm looking at it, and it, like I said, it starts to move. It takes two big steps, and it leaps over from the house it was on to the roof on the adjacent house. And once I saw it do that little leap, I just stood up, and I told my friends, hey, you know, I'm going to bed. And they're like, well, what's going on? And, you know, I explained to them what I just saw, and they just, like, laughed it off, saying, you know, I'm seeing things and stuff like that, you know, giving me a hard time as teenage friends would do, but like, no, I doped it out of there and I just went straight to bed. But the funny thing about that sighting was it was probably either the next night or the night after. I was the last one up at the house. I was watching TV. It was probably close to 11 o'clock at night. And I just sat there watching TV, and all of a sudden I heard three loud thumps on the ceiling of my house. Like, it was big, large, thumps. It made some of the windows shake in the living room where I was in, and pictures on the wall kind of, shake a little. So it had decent weight. Didn't wake anybody in my family up. But, once I heard that, instantly thought about that panther figure, cryptid, whatever it was, I saw the couple nights before. And I just got up and just went straight to bed, and that was the end of that. And say the third incident that happened to me during this few years, this timeline when I was growing up, was at the time, me and my friends, we were kind of big into Ouija boards. We'd make homemade ones, we mess around with them and stuff like that. And, some things would happen, most of the time not. But I remember we were at my friend's house, and he's like, hey, we were pulling around, playing video games and stuff for a while. And he's like, hey, you guys want to try out the Ouija board? And we're like, yeah, cool. Yeah, sure. Why not? So he busts out his, little homemade Ouija board. We get on it and we start asking questions, typical questions. Is anybody here with us? Yada, yada, yada. And it's moving to yes and stuff like that. And I thought to myself, I'm like, okay, I want to know if this is legitimately happened or not. So I got up from using it, and my friends were still there using it. So I was the one asking the questions, and they were going to be getting the answers from the board. And I asked, is there anybody here that, any spirit here that knows who I am? And I went to yes. In my head, I instantly thought of my grandmother that was on my dad's side, and she recently passed away about a year or so before. And I just, the next question I asked was, is this my grandmother? And the little handshake that they had went to yes. I'm like, okay, now I'm going to find out if, this is really her or not. I'm like, what was your nickname that you had, that, I knew that only the family knew. There's no way my friends know that, because they didn't know, who my grandmother was. They didn't even know my grandmother was dead. So I asked the question, and it goes to M-A-C, Mac. And that was her nickname. By then, my friends that were using the board, they're getting a little freaked out, because, this is the first time it's legitimately worked. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And I just, okay, this is you, grandma, can you do something to show us that you're really here? And my friend's room that we were in, on his desk was a pencil. And this pencil, I swear to this day, it lifted up and then it went straight back down. And when it did that, my friends that were in the room with me, they freaked. They got up, they ran out of the room. I mean, they were Hispanic, so they were diehard, growing up diehard Catholics. And they ran out the room. They started, one friend was in the other, ran to the other room, just sat down, started praying, rubbing on this crucifix necklace and stuff. And I was just left there in that room going, oh, wow, okay, hi, grandma. And so that was my one big, Ouija board experience. I know a lot of people say, Ouija boards, I guess they're inherently, they can be evil. I guess it's just however you want to use it. If you got the intentions inside it, I guess it'll probably amplify it or whatever. But, from my experience, just a way to just communicate. So there's that. And which leads, but it was probably a good 10 years. Passed on. It was about 2001, and I started an internet relationship with this lady that was living in England. And we've been talking for a good 6 to 8 months. And my plan was, go over there for a couple of weeks, meet her, and you know, see how things go. I was 21 at the time in 2001, but I remember we were talking. She was just recently out of an abusive relationship, and somehow her ex kind of weaseled his way, you know, back into living with her, saying, you know, he's got no place to go, his family's disowned, this and that. And I, you know, not to go into too many details, but he ended up like basically holding her hostage and did like all sorts of not very good things to her. But she was able to escape, and the police were able to, you know, arrest him. But, you know, a funny little coincidence that happened, you know, she was telling me later as we were talking online that, you know, the story, you know, came out on the local little Daily Echo newspaper that they have there. And it had, you know, the front page was a picture of her ex being put into a, you know, a police van. And the number plate on that police van, all the last three letters on that number plate was the initials of her dead mother. So in her mind, you know, she thought, you know, that was her mom basically telling her that, you know, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to take this guy away from you. So, you know, that was pretty nice. And, you know, and one other time, you know, we were talking before I went over there, we're talking online, and, you know, this is all happening and stuff. And she was having like a, you know, a moment, you know, getting emotional and stuff like that. And all of a sudden she starts telling me like, so I can smell her. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, I can smell my mom, you know, her perfume. She says the smell of her mom's perfume just started wafting through the room that she was in. And, you know, she instantly started to calm down. You know, obviously that was comforting her. So obviously, you know, her mom was there looking over her. So about a few more months passed by, and I finally make my way over to flying to England, down in the south coast in Dorset. That's where she lived. And I'm there with her, and things are going well. And I actually, you know, actually end up living there in England for the next 6 years. So obviously things went well. And we were there one night just hanging out at the house where a neighbor knocked on the door. And she's like, hey, you know, I got a gypsy friend over, and she does tarot cards. And I was just wondering if you guys want to come over and have your cards read by her. And we're like, oh, sure, why not? You got nothing else going on. So we go over there, lays there. You know, she does the cards for my, you know, she's my ex now, but my ex there does cards with her, and, you know, says stuff about her mom and stuff like that. And, well, you know, really nice stuff. And she comes to me, and she says that I got somebody looking over me, basically a family member that's passed on. It's basically like my guardian angel. And the first thing I thought of was my grandmother. We contacted her on that Ouija board. So that was kind of a nice little reinforcement of possibly, you know, what happened when I was a kid, you know, really, really happened. So yeah, I'm just living the life in England with her. And I was working for a local little cleaning company down in Dorset where we live. There's some holiday park, Rockley Park, down by the coast. And he had a contract to, you know, clean the entertainment center there and little caravans that were there that people stay in for the week or however long they're visiting. So I'd go in with them early mornings, and I'd help clean the entertainment complex, you know, put all the tables, straighten them up, back in the floor, make everything nice for that morning, whatever they were doing in that morning. But I remember one time I was setting the tables and chairs up, and we had a tea break. So we go have our break. When they get back, there's a whole row of chairs that have been pushed out, and they're all leaning against the table. And I know I didn't leave it like that, and I thought that was a bit odd. So, you know, I tell my boss, I'm like, hey, did anybody come in here and do this? And he's like, no, nobody was here, but it possibly was the ghost. And I'm like, okay, the ghost. Supposedly the story is years ago, there was a guy that used to, you know, do what we do, clean the entertainment complex and stuff. And I don't know if he passed away at the park or what, but supposedly his ghost is there, because my boss told me that one day that he was doing what I was doing, straightening the tables, cleaning everything up, straightening the chairs up. And he, once again, he went, had a break, and he came back, said there's about 10, 15 chairs all stacked on top of each other. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's a bit odd. So, but like, there was a lot of stories in that park that the security guards would tell us that they'd be there late at night, and the security cameras would catch children walking in hallways and stuff like that. And when they go check it out, there's nobody there. And up on the top floor of this entertainment complex used to be an adult only bar, but I guess they closed it down because somebody fell off. They had like little floor up top where they can, you know, they had another bar and stuff, and somebody fell to their death or something like that. I don't know if that's a true story or not, but that's the story they told. And supposedly, you know, they closed that bar down. It's just used for storage. But there's a few times when I had to get cleaning supplies from there, and I can hear stuff rustling about, and I actually heard a giant beach ball be kicked, and it flew across the room. And I kind of grabbed my stuff I needed and immediately left that room. And yeah, there's something there. But you know, like more recent stuff that's happened, I came back to California about 2006, 2007. And, you know, trying to live my life, I had a daughter. My daughter used to tell me stories that, you know, she'd see stuff at her mom's ranch that they lived in. She'd see like the typical like woman in white with dark hair, just, you know, standing there out in the field. And this is when she was probably about 4 or 5 years old. Yeah, I mean, that's about it for things that I've experienced. You know, hopefully some of this will work good for your show. You know, I enjoy what you do. It's a great show, and you know, hopefully this will find this, you know, interesting. I hope people, listeners, find this interesting as well.
Good stuff, Jason. Interesting. I like to, as well as people's own experiences, I like to hear, you know, things they've been told by friends and family members.
Yeah, it's like, oh, like one thing I'll just add to, I remember growing up too, you know, with my, not the grandma that passed away, but the grandma on my mom's side. I think we were just talking about ghosts or something like that. And, you know, she told a time where she was sleeping and she actually woke up, and right there on the foot of her bed was a vision of Jesus just looking at her, just the Jesus there, the white light around him. And he was there, she said, there basically like in the blink of an eye, he was gone. And just after he disappeared, the phone rang, and it was a family member telling her that her dad had just passed away. So that was, you know, it's interesting now, but, you know, growing up as a kid, that's a bit like, oh, that's a bit freaky. But
and was your grandmother particularly religious?
I mean, not like ultra religious. That's like my, like on both sides of my family, not, you know, never gone to church. I guess, you know, more, you know, spiritual. We know there's something out there. You know, you just live life as good as you can, treat people, you know, the way you want to be treated. You know, just never were the church going type people.
Not the first time I've heard something very, very similar to that, where someone's had a vision of you know, a religious icon, and then they're told that a family member have passed away.
I thought, you know, thinking about it now, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, like, you know, basically, you know, yeah, Jesus telling her, like, you know, we have your dad, everything's going to be okay, you know, because she found it comforting. It wasn't like, you know, Jesus, it's Jesus type of, you know, situation. It was just like, you know, comforting, knowing that, okay, he's in a good place now, you know.
Yeah, it is comforting. It is comforting to know that, you know, they're safe and in a better place.
Yeah. Yeah, just like with everything I've told, it just, you know, I just wish there was more, you know, recent stuff, because it'd be nice if I had these encounters, you know, now that I'm older and kind of have a, you know, a better understanding of, I guess you could say, like the paranormal and, you know, what things could be or not, like, you know, more, you know, I can be like definitely like, okay, that's that, or that's not that.
Of course, of course. So the meteor shower, so that would have been probably about August time you would have been watching that.
It was, yeah, it was around, I want to say, for some reason, I think it was around 1994. Because that was the, because I believe the my Ouija board experience, I think that was the first thing that happened. But I wanted to say that last because it kind of ties in when I moved to England and had that tarot card reading.
So the figure you saw, it was on the adjacent roof to you, a neighbor's roof?
Yeah, it was like right at like the house, my house I grew up in, you know, the front yard, then a small street across the street. That's where the neighbor's houses were. And it was just like, yeah, across the street. I was looking dead straight at it. And like I said, no features. It was, like I said, bipedal, but it was, like I said, hunched over. So it looked like it can equally, you know, move on all four legs if it wanted to. And I just, you know, in my mind, like with that tail, I'm like, it was like, it was panther-like.
It was stood up and you could see a tail. So it was comfortable, yeah, standing up, and then it went down on all fours.
It kind of, it didn't actually run on all fours, but it just hunched over. And that's when it started running on two legs. But I think it could, if it wanted to, I think it could have just went and on all fours if it needed to. But yeah, the jump it made, that jump was probably a good 15, almost 20 feet. And like it did it with these.
You could certainly discount a neighbor's cat. I mean, 6 to 7 feet tall.
Yeah, that thing was about, there's a good 6 to 7 feet tall. And like I said, the tail was equally as long. So it was a good 10 to 12, you know, total feet in length.
And you couldn't make any features. You couldn't see any eyes or anything.
Nothing like that. Like, yeah, it was just completely black, but it was blacker than, you know, the night sky. So, you know, we lived in a neighborhood, so you had, you know, some street lights and stuff. So you had the normal light pollution. So it wasn't completely black, but it was definitely, it was blacker than, you know, how dark it gets at night in that neighborhood.
And then just a couple of nights later, you then heard thumps on your own roof.
Yeah, three big thumps, almost like something, you know, landed 2 feet and then like either a third step or an arm or something extending down to steady itself. And that's when, yeah, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, that's, I don't want to know what that is. You know, I'm, like I said, this was, I'm like 13, 14 years old at the time. And you know, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm definitely going to bed.
To the safety of my sheets.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to sleep it off. It's fine. You can do whatever you want to do. I'm just going to go to bed.
And the area in California where you lived, was it suburbia?
Yeah, it's suburbia. I'll tell the town. It's Ripon, California. So there's a lot of farmland in the area. But where I lived at the time, the neighborhood I lived in, it was more of your basic suburban, you know, California-type neighborhood. Think of kind of like the type of neighborhoods and like movies like Poltergeist and stuff like that.
You know what, right? That's the first thing that came to mind when you were saying about that.
where like the area I lived in, like Central California, we basically, like, we always joked around like this is Satan, basically a desert that we're in, but we just were able to use it as farmland. It gets hot. It's like right now, in the last few days, it's been about 102-103 degrees, so.
That's hot. That's hot.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be pretty warm here till like the end of October. So it's not like over there where summer's like 2 weeks and then.
But back to wind and rain.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you were down by the coast as well. I mean, Dorset's quite nice. I haven't been there in many years.
It's a nice part of the country. You know, the city I lived in was Poole, you know, right by the Brownsea Island.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. That Rockley Park, it's just right there by the, you know, the coast leading to the Brownsea Island. It's a really nice area.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
And your ex, when she was in an abusive relationship and all that passed and the scumbag was arrested and those initials on that number plate. I mean, this is something I hear time and time again. Even if it's just not connected, it's a big jump. And for her mother's initial, her past mother's initials to be on that number plate, that I bet was really reassuring for her, knowing that she was being watched over. And then obviously she could smell her mother's perfume.
Yeah, and it's like she just, you know, not like she had a bottle of her mom's perfume there and it, you know, she's just smelling that. She didn't have anything like that there. And yeah, she said the smell just sort of like wafting over. And actually, when I was there one night, the same thing happened. We were just there and she's like, "Can you smell that?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, that's the perfume. So maybe that was at the time, you know, her mom like giving her seal of approval, like, okay, this guy is right, because, you know, she's my ex, but, you know, things ended on good terms. It was one of those things that, you know, I really couldn't stay in the country, and she didn't want to, she couldn't really come with me back to the States, so.
That's good. It's always good to remain on good terms.
Yeah.
An interesting, going back to your black triangle sighting, it's a very interesting detail when you were saying about the center red light. But in your case, it was moving in a figure of eight around the triangle.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because, you know, watching it, it's almost like the red light was separate from the, it wasn't like, you know, just a light within the triangle doing, it looked like it was detached from the triangle and just doing that figure eight just below it. Like it's just crazy that, you know, it just slowly was just flying over with no sound whatsoever, man. Me growing up, you know, I wanted to be a fighter pilot. So it was basically, I knew everything about planes and stuff like that. So, you know, I knew it had to be making a sound if it was anything, what I presume is man-made. But yeah, there was no sound whatsoever, nothing showing any form of, you know, propulsion, just the, you know, your typical, a black triangle, the three lights at each corner, and that red light doing that figure eight in the middle.
I know it was a long time ago, but how big would you have said this object was?
The distance that from us, like I said, I have to say it'd be at least 60 to 70 feet in length, possibly larger, either 60 to 70 to possibly the size of probably like a small airliner. So, you know, at most maybe 100 feet, but it was, I mean, for, I know a lot of people have, you know, seen sightings and said, like, oh, this was about 20, 30 feet. Like, no, this thing was pretty good size. That's one thing I remember. It was fairly large because we first thought it was possibly a Chinook. And a Chinook, it's about 60 feet or so in length.
Yeah, so it was a good-sized triangle then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, during that time, you know, there were so many mass sightings of these triangles, you know, towards the late 80s and 90s. So many mass sightings.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, like, this is my nerd airplane hack coming on. You know, at the time you had like the F-117, you know, like, I think this was just before like the Gulf War, so that would still be somewhat secret. And you got stuff like, you know, like the Blackbird. You know, if you look at that, that has distinctive triangle shape, but it wouldn't be flying that low to the ground, and you definitely hear it if it flew over.
Yeah, agreed. It wouldn't be flying that low. The high altitude, aren't they, those blackbirds?
Yeah.
And your daughter, so she was 4-5 years old when she had the sighting on her mother's ranch.
Yeah, it's like I was recently talking to her about it because, you know, growing up, you know, she took after me. She was a little bit weird and, weird stuff. And where we lived, you know, right across the backyard, like our neighbors, you know, they were fairly quiet because it was a graveyard. You know, she'd talk about, you know, her friends in the graveyard and stuff like that. And, you know, I had a birthday party for her and a friend of hers came over and she was having a conversation with my daughter in my daughter's room. And I remember my friend came out and she's like, "I don't know what's going on." What she's been doing the whole time is talking about ghosts and spirits. She's freaking me out. I don't know what's going on. So, you know, I don't know if it's just she just had a really vivid imagination or like this, you know, young kids, you know, maybe she saw stuff.
Like father, like daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where she gets it from.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, she's a chip off the old block. I just remembered one more thing that's happened. It's kind of interesting. It involves my father. Is he passed away about 10 years ago. And I remember this, that it was about 2 or 3 years ago. I get a call from my brother, because my brother still lives with my mom at home, and my dad, he passed away at home. And at that time, about 2 or 3 years ago, they bought a new display cabinet for the living room. My dad, he was cremated, so the ashes are there at the house. It was on top of the old cabinet they had in the living room, and they were replacing it with a new one, a bigger one. And it had these nice fancy glass doors and stuff like that. So they decided, oh, we'll put my father's ashes inside this nice decorative cabinet, close it up. It's all looking nice and stuff. And he said that night, I don't know if you remember, years ago, there's a fad of these little animatronic like hamsters that would sing stupid songs like Everybody's Kung Fu Fighting and have like a pair of nunchucks that would spin around.
Yeah, I do.
It was something like that, except it was a Scooby-Doo. And my dad got it for my mom at the time as like a little cheesy Valentine's Day gift. And it was Scooby-Doo it was singing some cheesy love song. I can't remember what it was, but it was in the computer cabinet of my dad, which spent a lot of time at, the last few years of his life. And my brother was saying, they were asleep, and it was probably about just after midnight. And all of a sudden they hear something that woke them up, and they're wondering what the heck that is. And, they get out of the bedroom, they're walking into the living room, and they notice that it's that Scooby-Doo singing. And that thing hasn't gone off in like years. That thing's hidden away in this like computer cabinet, collecting dust and everything. So it's there singing. So my brother turns it off. Like, okay, that's weird. Puts it back, and they go back. My mom and brother go back to sleep. And he says about an hour later, they start hearing stuff again. And they're like, what the heck? And they get up, they get out again, and yep, it's Scooby-Doo again singing. And that's when my brother's like, okay, Dad. So he turned Scooby-Doo off. He went to that new cabinet, opened up the little decorative doors, took my dad's ashes out and put it back on top of the cabinet like he was on the old cabinet that they replaced. So obviously my dad didn't like being put, basically locked away inside somewhere. He wanted to be back on top of the cabinet, I guess, being like a part of the family type of thing. So I thought that was a bit of a strange experience for them.
And nice as well. It makes complete sense. You could say, that's just a coincidence, that the little mechanism triggered, or the batteries were, still a bit of life in them. But I wouldn't say it's that, I would say it's more than likely that, your dad didn't want to be left in that cupboard. He wanted to be where he was originally, where he can watch over, be a part of the family.
Yeah. So I remember my brother's like, and it hasn't like put his ashes back on top of the cabinet, and said everything was quiet. It hasn't, nothing's gone off since. So.
And it probably won't do to you pop him in a cupboard again.
Yeah, exactly.
Our past loved ones, they do come back and visit. They are around us. They don't always make their presence known. They obviously on this show, they do in a lot of cases. Sometimes it can be a very small thing. Other times it can be, a little bit bigger, like your father did.
Yeah.
They're still around, and it's something, when we pass, we will do the same things to our loved ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If we want, them to know that we're here, if it's large or small, we'll do a little something to let them know.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Yeah, no problem, man. Yeah, I enjoyed being on your show.
Good stuff. Jason, it's been great speaking to you today, all right? Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah.
Keep in contact, and I'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Yep, have a good night.
Yeah, you too, Jason. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That is all for today. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Michael and Jason for sharing tonight. And as always, thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.